Well, good afternoon. How is everybody? Did everybody get a handout? If you do not have a handout, put your hand up and we can start just passing them back. I got lots of handouts. So, like Lindley said, my name is Jeremiah. That's a huge picture of myself, but that's okay. It's the only one I had. And so this is my beautiful wife, Rena. Rena and I actually had an anniversary last week, but we were absolutely swamped in our lives, and we actually both forgot. She said we were literally, like, it wasn't just me, it was both of us. Like, we were brushing our teeth, getting ready in the morning, and we were talking about something. I don't remember what the conversation was about, and she said, "Don't we have an anniversary coming up sometime soon?" And I said, "What kind of anniversary?" She goes, "You know, like a you and me anniversary." I said, "I don't know, what month is it?" I said, "We didn't get married till May." And she's like, "It's May." All right? And so we're a little busy right now, but it's okay, it's good. But she is the love of my life, and we have just a great life together. This is my daughter, Callie. She is 13 years old. She just got braces, and so now every single picture is a brace face cheese, and she's loving it. And so she is a joy in our life. She feels a strong call to missions, and so her life has really been focused in that direction. And then comes our littles. These three joys are Landy and Zayden and Lakota, in that order of height. And so these are our three babies. They are 2, 3, and 4. We have adopted them, and it is so exciting. The Lord has just blessed us through and through. As a matter of fact, we were able to bring them each home from the hospital as soon as they were born. And even more extraordinary is that they're a sibling group. So every time mom had a baby, we got a phone call and we brought a baby home. So I like to make the joke that most people get 9 months to plan for a baby, and we get about 9 minutes. And so, I mean, that's literally, we get a phone call and we're like, why not? What's one more baby? And so this is our great, big, happy, healthy family, and we are blessed. And so we are talking today about 12 principles of building great teams. And so I am so incredibly excited. If you're just coming in, Chris actually has some handouts over here if you need a handout, because you're going to be taking lots of notes, because I want you to take this information home with you. I want you to put it into practice. Speaking of which, hey Chris, can you toss me my pen real quick? I gotta make a note real fast. Also, the
way to go, Chris.
no joke. The thing that I want to learn about, we're breaking our session, not just into 12 principles of building great teams, but the first 4 principles will be leadership principles. The next 4 principles will be like strategy principles. And then the last 4 principles will be team team member principles. And hey, Chris, can you toss me a water real quick? Principle number 1 is don't drop the ball. Principle number 1 is don't drop the ball. Here's what I mean by don't drop the ball. As leaders, we're talking about 4 leadership principles when it comes to building great teams. As leaders, we are responsible for following through with every idea we commit to. Too often what happens is we ask our people, hey, let's do this, or hey, let's do that. And what we end up doing is we drop the ball along the way. And what happens is people start losing trust, right? So you saw me drop the pen. You saw me drop the water bottle. How many of you want to throw me your cell phone right now? Right? You don't. Because there's no trust. And as a leader, if we are asking people to join us and join our team, but we are consistently dropping the ball, what's going to happen is our team members aren't going to trust us. I have some friends. Their name is John and John. And John is a senior pastor, and John is an associate pastor. And I called associate pastor John one day, and I said, John, Have we ever done a next gen here in our area, here on our district? And he said, no, we haven't. I said, well, talk to lead pastor John, and you and John can do a next gen church plant training here on the district. He goes, Jeremiah, there's a problem. I said, what? He said, our board is very reluctant to letting us do anything. I said, why? That's crazy. He said, because senior pastor John always goes to these conferences, always goes to these trainings, and he always comes home and has all these great ideas. And he says, let's do this, let's do this, let's do this. And within a week or two, he's dropping the ball. And now the church just doesn't trust him to implement new ideas. And so the board actually froze all the money for new projects, new plans, new things like that. So as a leader, if you're going to build great teams, you cannot drop the ball. Principle number two, if you're going to build a great team, you as a leader have got to be self-aware. We talked about this a little bit in our last session. What does it mean to be self-aware? It means a couple different things. One, it means knowing your strengths, knowing what you do well and doing those things well. But it also means knowing your weaknesses. Now, leadership philosophies used to say, you should do what you're good at, but work on what you're weak at. Like focus on your weaknesses. And that's not always true. The actual best practice to do is to examine yourself, understand what you're maybe weak at, understand what some of your lack is, and then substitute that in with other people who do that job well. And when you substitute that in with people who do that well, you're obviously substituting people in who do it better than you, but you'll also be putting people in that spot of your weakness who will take whatever you're doing to the next level. And the other thing about being self-aware is understanding kind of who you are as a person. And for example, I used to work with somebody who was very overbearing, who was very micromanaging, who was very my way or the highway. He was very, what's that kind of leadership called? I can't even think right now. It's after Mother lunch. Hen. Mother hen, almost. And what's that? Authoritarian, that's what I was thinking for. He was a very authoritarian leader, but you'd try to explain that to him. He's like, no, I'm not that person. I was like, yeah, you micromanage everything. No, I don't. I just want it done right. And so if you have this idea, you're always saying, if I want things done right, I have to do them myself. Then you probably have some deeper things going on, maybe trust issues, maybe inability to work well with others. And if you were a little more self-aware, you might be able to see those lacks and be able to fill those in with the right people. The third leadership principle when it comes to building great teams is that you have to understand that you are a leader of leaders, right? The problem we have is we think we're just organizing a group of followers and they should follow us wherever we go. But that's not the case. When you have people in the church who are wanting to serve, when you have people in your church who are wanting to jump on board with whatever programs that you have going on, whatever projects you have taking place, whatever ministries or classes they have going on, when you have people come on board because they feel a sense of leadership within themselves. And so you don't just have mindless followers who come in to do whatever you tell them to do. You yourself, as you build a team, you are a leader of other leaders. And so, as a leader of other leaders, you don't just tell people what to do and equip and empower, but you equip and empower them to lead with their gifts and abilities. That's how a leader leads other leaders. A leader who leads other leaders looks and identifies certain potentials. A leader of other leaders looks and they see things in somebody that they know can become something more. A leader of other leaders sees a certain gift and a talent and says, you know what, that would be great on our team. And you equip them and you empower them to take whatever gifts and talents that they have concerning what it is that you're doing and be able to let them loose to be able to do what you are really limited to do yourself. And so when you recognize you don't just have a bunch of followers, but you have a bunch of other leaders that can take this project way to the next level. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. The fourth leadership principle is this, is that we have to learn to be excellent every time. Now, here's what I mean by this. I worked with a guy one time who, he just liked to do stuff, and so he did a lot of stuff all the time. All the time he did a lot of stuff. And it was just a lot of stuff here, a lot of stuff there, a lot of stuff there. And what happened was every time he did something, what ended up taking place was it got done, but it was just kind of subpar. You know, it was just kind of like bare minimum. It was just kind of like, you know, entry level stuff. He didn't really have this sense of excellence to him. But rather, it was just a sense of, let's just get something started. Let's just do something. It's good enough. I heard him say that a lot. He's like, oh, it's good enough. But we don't want to be just good enough. Because as a leader who doesn't drop the ball, as a leader who is self-aware, as a leader who is leading other leaders, you want to lead in a capacity that is in has an element of excellence to it that people see it and want to invest in it. See, the more excellent you are as a leader and the more excellent your projects are, the more excellent, the more that excellence draws people to your projects and ministries. So, take a minute and I want you to think about where it is that you currently lead that you need team members. For me, for a long, long time, it was youth ministry. I need volunteers for youth ministry. For some of you, it may be children's. For some of you, it may be hospitality. For some of you, it may be work projects. I don't know. But when you think about the team that you need to build, think about this. That I had this situation when I was a youth pastor. That I would ask people to come and join my team, but they didn't come and join my team because they didn't really see the level of excellence that needed to be there in order for them to want to invest in. And so ask yourself, when it comes to my team, how can I get better? How can we make it better? How can this become more excellent in what we're doing? I was a worship leader for 15 years. And if you want to know about excellence, try worship ministry. I know you're a worship minister, right? How many other worship ministers are in here? Yeah, so here's the deal with worship ministry. You're working with a lot of different people. In worship ministry, you're working with musicians. In worship ministry, you're working with sound guys. In worship ministry, you have to print off music. In worship ministry, you have to know your transitions. You have to know your keys. You have to know all the stuff. So if any of you have ever been in worship ministry and the worship leader comes in on Sunday and you're like, great, worship leader, what are we going to do? I don't know, we're going to pick some songs. Like, really? What songs? Yeah, I don't know. And you start pulling songs and they're in different keys and keys that don't really mesh well together. Like, this one's in E and this one's in Q and this one's in... You're like, wait, Q's not even a key. And they're like, yes, it is. No, it's not. And there's this argument breaking out. And then, like, you're supposed to have practice wrapped up by this time and practice hasn't even started yet. He's like, hey, I want to introduce a new song. You guys probably never heard this song because I wrote this song. I actually wrote this song on the way to church, so I haven't really got it all worked out yet, but you know what? God is good. God is good. Spirit, lead us. Lead us on. And if you've ever been on a worship team that didn't have a level of excellence to it, you got people dropping off like flies. I mean, they're just dropping down because they just don't want anything to do with a lack of excellence. But if you have a worship team, that by the time the worship team comes in, all the music is already printed out. All the keys transition beautifully. You have all the solo assignments. You have all of the all of the transitions through the song and from one song to another, and they're songs that are familiar. You even sent out earlier that week the song list so everyone could listen to all the songs and know exactly what their parts are. They get there on Sunday, all their music's already in place. You get up, and they're like, okay, we start practice in 5 minutes. If you need a drink or go use the restroom now, go ahead. If not, let's go ahead and start early. And the pastors are like, thank you, Jesus. And the worship team, they have a great practice, and everything's beautiful, and the presence of God is just sensed in the midst of that, and like, this is going to be a great service. And then you have time for fellowshipping before service starts, and you're hanging out, and you're praying with one another, and in time to get up onto the platform and go, and your music, and everyone's looking at this, and from the congregational point of view, they're looking at the situation saying, this is like a well-oiled machine. I want to be a part of that. Because excellence works every single time. So, before we move on to the next four, any questions about leadership principles and team building? Moving on. We're going to go into four strategy principles. Oh man, my PowerPoint messed up. It's okay. Clarity changes everything. So Will Mancini says, clarity isn't everything, but clarity changes everything. And this idea of clarity changing everything is really an idea of helping your team understand where exactly they're going to go, what exactly they're going to accomplish, and how to exactly get from A to B. And so when we talk about clarity, we are identifying an ultimate destination and we provide a clear path to get there. That's what clarity is. We are providing an ultimate destination. This is where we're going to end up. And this is the path we're going to take to get there. And if there's questions along the way, I'd be happy to answer those questions. But everybody knows what we're here for, everybody knows where we're going, and everybody knows exactly what needs to be done in order to reach that thing. So clarity changes everything. So what are you clear about? You want to clarify your values as a team. You want to clarify what excellence looks like. So it's one thing to say, let's be excellent. It's another thing to say, excellent looks like having music printed out on the stand, songs ready to go, so on and so forth. Clarity isn't just saying we're going to accomplish our goals. Clarity says, this is what accomplishing our goals looks like. You want to be clear when you say, we're going to make it better. It's not enough just to say make it better, but we're going to say, we're going to make it better by doing this. And so clarity changes everything. And let me tell you what clarity does for your team. Again, it builds a sense of confidence in your team. Clarity on exactly where you're going to go and how you're going to get there empowers them to be able to think of more ideas on maybe if we're going to make it better, maybe this idea will actually make it better. So maybe this road's a little bumpy. Maybe we need to smooth it out a little bit for people coming in behind us. You know, and so when you provide clarity, you also provide an opportunity for more great ideas to begin coming in. Another issue for clarity, especially if you have projects that need to be done and things that are due, clarity provides deadlines. It's okay to provide deadlines for your ministry team. So, children's minister, I want to see a plan for VBS no later than March. Okay, you can be even more specific. I want March 17th to have your VBS plan ready to go and for us to be able to work on if we're going to do VBS this summer. Deadlines are okay. It's a clear expectation. It's an expectation that is easily met if it's easily understood. Got it? Next one is don't give out work, but inspire inspiration. Don't give out work, but inspire inspiration. So in my office, I have this big whiteboard that's about the size of the screen here. And I work on the bottom half of the whiteboard. That's where I work out all my sermons and all my ideas. And, you know, if we're writing stuff, I'll always making notes on the bottom of my whiteboard. On the top of my whiteboard, I kind of have it like sectioned off. And I have all these different like inspirational quotes that I come across. And as I come across these inspirational quotes, I like to write them down. And this is by far one of my most favorite inspirational quotes from Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. I don't know how to pronounce that. It's French. But it says this: if you want to build a ship, don't drum up people to collect wood and don't assign them tasks and work, but rather teach them to long for the immensities of the sea. How many of you ever heard that quote before? Yeah, I hadn't either until I saw it. But there's just such a beautiful explanation of what it means to be able to inspire vision. So if you're wanting to, create a team to do a specific job, you don't just get a group of people together and say, you're doing this, you're doing this, you're doing this, you're doing this. Let's take VBS for example. Let's say you have a team of people who's wanting to throw this killer VBS this coming summer, right? And yes, there is responsibilities to be had, but we can get to those in the due time. In the meantime, let's go ahead and create a beautiful VBS. And let me tell you why VBS is so important to me. Because when I was a young child and I was in a home and we didn't have any money and this whole situation with my parents and somebody came to my house and invited me to a VBS and I went to a VBS, and when I went to VBS, man, I was shown such love, and I was we received cookies every day, and I hadn't eaten for a whole day, and when they gave me cookies, I finally had something to eat, and then I asked about taking some cookies home, and they sent me a bag of cookies home, and I was able to take those cookies, and I got to feed my little brother with them also, because he hadn't eaten that day either, and man, that's where I met the Lord. And so I took my little brother, who was too young to go to VBS, but I took him anyway. And they said, he can come, it's okay, we'll watch him, it'll be fun. And we were in that church for years. And if it was because of that church and that VBS that I was able to come to the Lord and I'm able to serve in the church today. And think about this. Think about this. How many more of those people, those kids, are out there right now needing a VBS for God to really draw them in and show them the love of Jesus and the love of the church that will one day raise them up to be the next great preacher like Billy Graham and so on and so forth. So that really wasn't my story at all. I was just kind of making that up as I went along. But that's what it looks like to be able to teach them to long. Pam's like, that's not your family. It wasn't. I was just making it up. But that's what it looks like to teach people to long for the endless immensities of the sea. We don't have to drum up work. We don't have to give out assignments. Let's have a great VBS. You're in charge of music. You're in charge of games. You're in charge of snacks. You're in charge of publicity. You're in charge. You know, that's not how you build a great VBS. You set the inspiration of what a VBS can do. You set the tone of what can be accomplished. You set the vibe of, this is ultimately what we're striving for. This is ultimately what we're going to accomplish. And as people hear the inspiration, they hear the vision, they hear the idea of what could be, you will never have to drum up work. Why? Because once people catch on to that vision, they'll be like, well, I could do games. I'm not very good at anything else, but I'm good at games. I'm an expert at water balloons. Perfect. Well, all I know how to do is make cookies. I can make 100 dozen cookies. Spiritual gift. All I'm good at is singing. I could sing some songs with some kids. So when you teach them to long for the immensities of what can be, they'll give themselves the assignments. And so we don't hand out work, we don't give out work, but we inspire vision. Third strategy is this, is we have to have a clear channel of communication. There is nothing more frustrating for any person in any team than to not be communicated with on how things are going to go. I mean, it is just absolutely frustrating to show up at work and all of a sudden things are happening and you're like, wait, why is this not happening? Like, or why is this happening? Why didn't I not know about this? Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, I guess I just forgot. Did you tell anybody? No, I just thought it was a great idea. And so I just went ahead and do it. Taking the initiative. It's good. No. If you want to do something, you got to communicate. And here's why communication is so important. Is when you communicate clearly to your team, what that does is it allows your team to have a very strong sense of confidence in your leadership. That's what communication does. And so this idea of over communication doesn't really exist because you really cannot over communicate. And so the clearer you communicate and the more often you communicate, it might get annoying to receive an email about every 20 minutes of communication, but it's appreciated. That's the thing we have to realize. It may be annoying, but it's appreciated. And so when people are communicated to very, very well, what ends up happening is their confidence in you as a leader goes up and up and up and up. Here's the other thing that clear communication does, is clear communication also prevents other people on the team from chasing rabbits. Is that a good way to put it? Preachers know it as going down rabbit trails, but clear communication keeps your team together and moving in the same direction at the same time. And so in order to do that, you create clear channels of communication. So here's some ideas for clear channels of communication. Having regular meetings. Everybody hates meetings, but they are so important to have. And so you sit down, you have regular scheduled meetings, and you hash things out. And you communicate in those meetings. Those meetings should be a non-negotiable, right? You got to keep those meetings so everybody knows what's happening. Second, emails are great. Email chains are even better. Mass emails are perfect, that everyone can communicate through this email thread. So have everybody's email, make sure it goes out to everybody in that group all the time so everybody knows. Conference calls. There are so many free conference calls online that you can get that you just dial in the number and you push in a code and then everybody's talking on the phone at the same time. And what's good about that is that nobody has to leave home. Nobody has to go anywhere. You can do the same thing with like Zoom or Skype. Have group computer meetings and just communicate something real quick. Social media is also a great use of communicating channels. We actually use a platform called GroupMe. How many of you heard of GroupMe? Yeah, perfect. It's not really like your text messaging because it doesn't ding, 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 ding at you, but you can just check the thread anytime you want and then read all the conversations going on. And so we do that with all of our groups. All of our groups have GroupMe feeds and they're plugged into it. And so even the leader of leaders can see the different groups that are going on. And so having a clear communication channel is going to save you so much grief. The last strategy principle is this, is that the leaders build the what and the teams build the how. So basically it's like this. You as the leader kind of decide what the project is going to be. We're on a good VBS track, so let's stick with VBS. You as the leader say, we're going to do a VBS. All right, VBS is going to be beautiful. The little kids are going to come to Jesus and turn into great preachers. You know, you inspire and it's going to be awesome. You get your team together and then you say, what do we need to do to make this the best VBS ever? Building great teams empowers your team to do the how. How are we going to do this? What do we need? What's a need in our community right now for kids? How can we meet that need? So part of allowing your team to do the how is for you as the leader to be able to ask the right questions. And so to be a good, oftentimes we think to be a great leader, you need to have all the right answers, but that's not true. To be a great leader, you have to ask the right questions, and as you ask the right questions, your teams are going to start putting together the answers for you. It's that simple. It's that easy. And here's the hard part as the leader, is that we as leaders want to be the one with all the answers. We want to be the superhero. We want to be the guy or the gal that says, look, I know how to do everything. Follow me. Dun, 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 dun. And it's not the case. And so you have to check your pride at the door, swallow it down, be a little humble, say, you guys are great group of minds in this room. And I believe we can have the greatest VBS that we've ever seen. How are we going to do it? And everyone's like, well, we should do this. We should do that. We should do this. Does that mean you do everything everyone says? No. What you do is you just get you get your whiteboard, right? And be like, hey, so how are we going to do this? Chris says, I think we need to have a clown. Chris, that's a great idea. I don't know if we'll do that, but let's go ahead and put it on the board. Get a great big clown. All right? And you're like, okay, how else are we going to do this? And Pam says, I think we need to have great snacks. Great idea, Pam. You put it on the deal. And you start going around the room and you're getting all these great ideas on how to do a great VBS. And then you have this whole list and you just stop. You have enough ideas right here. You don't need every idea. You just need some ideas. And we're like, okay, so let's go through this list. What do you think would make a great a VBS idea on this list? And they say, oh, great food would be good. Okay, let's go ahead and circle it, and we'll keep that one. How about a clown? Yeah. Sorry, Chris. I'm not going to do the clown. You know? And that's how you develop the how. You put out the what. This is what we're going to do. How are we going to do it? You start listing the ideas, and you let the team begin to shape what it is that that project's going to do. Those are all the strategy principles. Any questions?
You know, Jeremiah, oh, go ahead.
Good.
It's not necessarily a question, but a lot of what you're talking about, like in the channel communication, is that you're allowing your team to understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. They understand what's going on. When they understand that you want them to be a team, then they own the project.
That's right.
If they don't own the project, they will never do it.
That's right.
They don't feel that owning the project is the big key.
That's good. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Keeping them in the loop, keeping them empowered. Absolutely.
You know, I was thinking about, Jeremiah, how do you take individuals that actually want to be a part of your team, and if they really are not to the place where they want to speak up for themselves, but you know they have definite gifts and abilities, mm-hmm. and you want to get them involved, how do you get that person to speak up, take ownership, you know, and move forward, help develop that within them if they're not willing to speak for themselves?
Yeah. Oftentimes what you do is you just call them out, you know. Like, Lynn Lee, your husband talks a lot, but I know you have great ideas too. What else would be a good VBS idea? And you just kind of bring that out of them. And so if you don't think they're going to respond well to that, you can begin to talk kind of about an idea that you already know they have, and kind of draw that out of them and be like, yeah, you know, this would be great. And I was actually talking to Lynn Lee earlier, and she was talking about something like an inflatable and a bouncy house. And man, kids love inflatables and bouncy houses. Lynn Lee, tell us a little bit more about what you were saying. It's all right. Lynn Lee likes to talk too.
Yep. I had a situation where, you know, you're asking, you're in church, and you're letting people know what the need is.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until later with a conversation with someone, and I hear him say, well, you know, just ask me if you need something. And I'm thinking, I just did. I was asking the whole congregation. Oh, no. It has to be a personal invite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ask you, need me.
Yeah.
So
you have to do the one-on-one.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. How many of you have had a problem of getting a team together? Yeah. So, for those of you that have been successful at forming the team, what are some examples that will help us to be able to get a team together?
I have one.
Go ahead.
I had word that a lady in our church wanted to start an outreach ministry. Mm-hmm. She's kind of shy and stuff. And so, one Sunday after church, I just went up and talked to her. I said, I heard you want to start outreach ministry. How can we kind of help that out?
Yeah.
And I volunteered to be her theological coach while she learned how to do witnessing and the life.
That's very
and
good.
That's all I did for her.
Yeah.
But encourage her, because it took a year to get from a Bible study to an outreach ministry. But at the end, though, she mentioned, because I told her, don't let all the time we're doing this deter you from doing the other thing.
Yeah.
And that's how it worked out. It took about a year, but she's got the outreach ministry going.
That's good. That's good. Who else had a success at building a team? Come on, Ron.
I think you have to let your leaders lead. And like you said, it's all your pride.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let them have a good idea.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. Yeah.
Go back to communication. If you dictate to someone or to a group, they have a tendency to be turned off and not one optional part of it.
Yeah.
Start the conversation. What do you think about this?
Yeah. Absolutely. That's good. That's real good. Yes?
Put off a little fire sometimes in the group, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When people start disagreeing, like in one team, one person said, well, I just don't like so-and-so. And over time get to the root of that and then put that fire out. And the whole team just moves on.
That's good. That's good.
I think a lot of that, you have to be the leader. You have to be able to say no.
Yeah.
And people can get mad, but sometimes you have to be okay with them being mad.
He doesn't like
it. I'm going to say no, and you don't like it. I'm sorry about that, but.
Yeah. You should have been here for our last session.
Yeah.
We had a whole section on saying no. All right, let's talk about four team member principles. When you're looking for team members, Andy Stanley says, look for doers, not thinkers. And here's the difference between a doer and a thinker. A thinker is somebody who really analyzes the situation and wants to, you know, put a process in place and, you know, maybe we need to really think about all the implications we're putting out. And maybe, you know, and there's just a lot of thoughts, a lot of questions, a lot of processing, and in the meantime, nothing gets done, right? And so Andy Stanley says, look for doers. And you'll know your doers, because your doers are people who organize the task and get things done efficiently and effectively. And so you could say, hey, we're going to have a barbecue after service on Wednesday night. And you got a guy who says, hey, I can barbecue. And almost without even asking him what to do, he's already got the grill, he's already got the meat, he's got the coals going, he's got everything fired up. He's a doer, right? And so when you're looking for team members, look for people that have a track record of getting things done. When you're putting the team together for a specific project, look for people that can take whatever idea comes out and just really begin to put it into practice and do it quickly. And so I'm going to boast on Pam real quick, because she's one of my favorites. So when she was, I can't remember if you guys were still in the Joplin district or not at this time, but we were doing something over in Independence, and somebody asked Pam about doing, it was a Christmas party or something, I don't remember what we were doing, but they said, Pam, will you do all the snacks for that meeting? And she says, well, sure I will. Oh no, I think we were at Pittsburgh. I don't remember. But anyway, they said, Pam, will you set up all the snacks for the evening? And she said, well, yeah, that's fine, sure. And not only does Pam cook great food, like, I mean, she is like the professional at catering. She's at her own business. She's a consultant. She's doing all this stuff. She's just like, if you need food, call Pam. That is Rolla, Missouri, Church of the Nazarene. And so Pam goes in, and she doesn't just bring cookies, right? She brings the whole allotment of things. There's like 25 different flavors of chocolate. There's like all these different, you know, I mean, she's got like these display things, like some are higher than others, and it's like this river of food that just flows like this, right? And it's just a beautiful looking thing. She's like, I don't remember that. She doesn't remember that because she does this almost every single time, right? Why? Because Pam's a doer. She gets things done. And so if ever there's anything that I need food for and Pam's close by, I'm like, hey, Pam, can you help with this? Because I know people are going to walk in, they're going to see this table that Pam set up, and everyone's going to go, wow. It's incredible. Look for doers. Look for people who get things done. They do it effectively. They do it efficiently. And really, to get things done without having to do a whole lot of like, come on, get it finished, get it finished, get it finished.
How do you get thinkers to be doers, though?
Yeah. That's the key, is you don't. A lot of thinkers, it's hard to get thinkers to be doers, but you can always get a doer to think right. That's just the case. Now, if you were, there's really just no way around it. A lot of thinkers just don't do much. They just, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but their gifts are more suited for, help me out here, their gifts are more suited for, you know,
strategic planning,
things like that.
You, strategically think about the vast ocean of,
yeah,
the vision.
Yeah.
And I've worked for a thinker, and she's a great motivator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she's thought through every option that could be, and she's processed it, and then she helps motivate to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Which.
Sometimes thinkers are talkers, too.
Yeah.
And they get in the way of the
doers. Yes, sir. That is very true. That's very true. Yeah.
But I think you talk about getting in the way of each other. I think the other part of that is the intentionality of how we partner people together makes a big difference too. Mm-hmm. So really thinking through, if we are helping put a team together, whatever that is, strategically thinking about who really does work well together, who really doesn't work well together.
Yeah.
Let's not put them together.
Yeah.
You know, and really intentionally doing that when we're putting some of those projects.
That's good. That's really good. You want to get the right people in the right seats. Jim Collins has a book called From Good to Great. And he says, if your project is a bus, you want to get the right people on your bus. Right? You want to put the right people on your bus. But you don't just want to get the right people on your bus. You want to get the right people in the right seats on your bus. This happened with us about a year ago. We were growing pretty rapidly at our church in Junction City. And at the same time, we had a situation where we had to let our children's pastor go. And when we let our children's pastor go, there were two ladies that were very well equipped to be able to fulfill that position. Okay? And so what happened was, one lady, she worked in an elementary school. She was excited about ministry, wanted to be in ministry, but didn't really feel called to children's ministry, but was willing to take a children's ministry position just to be on staff at the church and working in ministry. The other gal was a homeschool mom of 9 kids and had been like the right-hand gal of our children's minister, and we had talked to her about filling that spot in the children's ministry as well. And she had a heart for children's ministry. She wanted to see kids come to Jesus and be raised up and so on and so forth. And so we had a decision to make, and we were looking at these two gals. Both would probably be equally as effective in children's ministry. But the gal from the elementary school, she had different gifts that she was stronger in, and her gifts were stronger in connections and administrations and things like that. Well, it just so happened that the homeschool mom of nine didn't want to work full time because she was a homeschool mom of nine. And so she said, I would be willing to take the children's ministry position if I could do it part time. And basically what she was saying was, if I could do it on my own time, which was perfectly fine and understandable. And so we said yes, we allowed her to go part-time, and so then we hired the gal from, excuse me, from the elementary school to come on part-time as well, which even as part-time she was making more money than she was at the elementary school. So it was an easy answer for her. And so she came on as our director of discipleship and connections. And it was a perfect fit for her. It was a perfect fit for the mom who was going to do our children's ministry. And so not only did we get the right people on our staff, but we got those right people in the right seat where they were most effective. And so when you're putting a team together, it's not enough just to get right the right people. It's not enough just to get doers, but it's even more so better to get people in the seats that they are best suited for them. Make sense? Great. When you're putting together a team, chemistry counts. Chemistry counts. And here's what I mean by that. Is that I told you the reason in the last story that we had to let a children's pastor go. Well, the reason we had to let her go was because we were trying to move in a direction that we felt like the Lord was moving. The church was growing. Things were advancing. And everybody on our staff was completely on board to see this happen, except for her. And so there were times where she just didn't show up to any meetings at all. Every time she would show up to a meeting, she would just voice her disagreement and say, I'm not doing this. I'm not going in this direction. I'm just here to do my job. And there was just this lack of chemistry. It got to the point, because our staff is very, very close-knit. We are very, very family to one another. And so we're always in each other's offices. We're always horsing around. We're always going out together. We're always doing these different things. And she would just isolate herself from everybody, because she didn't want to be a part of what was going on. And because there was no chemistry, what ended up happening was it became a thorn in the side of our staff. And so we had to ask her to step down because there was no chemistry there. And so when the new children's ministry came on, there was chemistry, and the children's ministry took off again. And so did the vision of the church. And so when it comes to putting a team together, you want to make sure that there's chemistry between you and all of your team members. Because they used to tell us this saying that one bad apple ruins the whole bunch. Yeah, you ever heard that before? I've never really seen that happen because of all the cool preservatives we have nowadays. But apparently that's true. Apparently that's true. That one bad apple can ruin the whole bunch. And you want to make sure that when you're putting a team together, that your teams are very cohesive, that your teams very much have this good fluidity and this chemistry that allows them to make each other better. And I know with our teams, that's one of the things that is most evident in all of our team members, is that they do so much to make each other better, to keep each other encouraged, to keep each other motivated, to keep each other blessed and moving forward. And finally, our final principle is this, is learn to celebrate the victory of your values. If you really want to know what a true victory is, have a value system. And when people step up and meet your value system, that's when you celebrate. See, we have this, and it's really not very good. Like, it's not very good at all. But we have this tendency to want to celebrate numbers, right? We have this tendency to want to celebrate success. We have this tendency to want to celebrate things like achievement. Look what I've accomplished. But the reality is those kind of celebrations aren't really victories at all. Those kind of celebrations are pretty fleeting, you know, because then what happens is the next time you're trying to have some success and it doesn't succeed, then now you're no longer good at your job. And but sometimes it just happens, right? But if you set it up where your team has certain values, and you can have values like, you know, we're going to, well, you guys have values at your church. What are some of your values?
We're praying people. One of our values is community impact.
Okay.
Kingdom growth, multiplication.
Okay, so let's just take being a praying people, right? And you say, we're a praying people. It's one of our values. That's one of the values of our team, is we're a praying people. And so when you guys get together and you're ready to start the meeting, and all of a sudden one of your team members goes, hey, hold on, we're praying people. We didn't pray. Let's go ahead and pray. And you pray for that, and you celebrate that. You celebrate the victory of your values. Thank you so much for reminding me, because I was kind of getting lost. Or you start seeing, you get a letter from somebody that said, hey, one of your people from your team, I ran into them at the grocery store, and something happened, and they said, you know what, we're praying people. Let's just pray about this right now. And they prayed about it, and they lived out the value of your team, and those values, that's the victory that needs to be celebrated. And so when you set values for your team, you celebrate the victory of your values being held out in order to build, really just, or celebrate just the accomplishment of what the team is doing, because, you know, you always become what you celebrate. You always become what you celebrate. And so if you're going to be a team who focuses on values, celebrate the victory of your values. And then you will have no problem being mixed up with these false ideas of victory with numbers and with accomplishments and things like that. So those are really how you, the four team member principles when we're putting a team together. I know that was kind of a lot of information. But these are just some things that the Lord has been putting on my heart. Any questions about team members?
On the right people in the right seat.
Yes.
You can't confuse a talent outside the church as being one that's used on the inside. I had a friend, very good kindergarten teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday school teacher, was not it. Put her behind the piano. She was great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So right seat. Mm-hmm. The right seat. That's good. Thank you for that. Anything else? Any other questions? Here's what I'm confident of. I am confident of this, that if you're here today, you're here today because God has chosen you to be a great leader. And if you're here today as God's chosen great leader, you are capable of building great teams. And oftentimes, we doubt ourselves. Oftentimes, we think, oh, maybe I'm just not gifted in the team building area. Nope, just find these great principles and start putting them to use, and you yourself will be finding a great leader building great teams. Let me pray for us as we go, because we're praying people. Jesus, thank you for everything that you've done. God, thank you that you are developing in us a reality that we're not supposed to do this alone. And a reality that it's not all about us, and it's not all about me getting out and getting something done, but it's about together doing something more powerful than we could ever do by ourselves.
Yes.
And so, Lord, in order to accomplish great things for you, God, I pray that you would help us really begin to build great teams. Father, shape us to be the leader that you would call us to be, and help us as we shape our teams to do those very things you call us to. We love you in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you, guys.